For more presentations like this, visit www.xenos.org.
All right. So I've been talking the last couple of weeks about this whole idea of wisdom, which is just that ability, because of a relationship that we have with God, to begin to see things His way, from His perspective. And it's just like as we get to know Him, just like we would get to know any other person, we begin to kind of take on how they sense things, how they view things, how they are affected by things, how they interact with things. And it's like that with God, because God's personal, and if we are relating to Him, and we are relating to Him through His Word especially, then we are just able more and more to develop that kind of radar that enables us to kind of perceive things from a spiritual point of view. And James has been talking about this primarily through chapter 4. And tonight we want to continue a series of applications that James brings to the idea, the concept of wisdom. Last time we talked about it in terms of finding wisdom in interpersonal conflict. Very appropriate. Very important, I think, for all of us, because we are fallen human beings and we're interacting with other people who've got problems too. Tonight we want to talk about wisdom in the business of life. And what I mean by that is that, you know, a lot of us, all of us really are very busy people. American culture is dizzying in its busyness. And people who leave the country for a period of time and come back, I find part of the debriefing process is like, how do you guys live like this? And because it's really not characteristic of most of the way the rest of the world lives. It's just always on the move. We're juggling all kinds of things. You may find yourself at that place where you're asking yourself, okay, I'm busy as I could possibly be, but am I accomplishing anything? Am I really moving any closer to something that matters to me or that matters to God in my life? And so we want to talk tonight about James's discussion about making spiritually minded decisions in the business of life. Let's take a look at our passage. He says in verse 13, "Come now, you who say, today or tomorrow we'll go to such and such a city. We'll spend a year there and engage in business and make a profit. Yet you do not know what your life will be like tomorrow. You are a vapor that appears for a little while and then vanishes away." How James-like. Instead, he says, you ought to say, if the Lord wills, and we live, and also do this or that. But as it is, you boast in your arrogance, and all such boasting is evil. Therefore, to the one who knows the right thing to do and doesn't do it, to him, that is a sin. Okay, so here's James' framework. He's trying to get us into this question. He begins with, come now, you who say. He's going to do that again in our paragraph next time where he talks about affluence. But here he says, come now, you who are in this place, and you're saying to yourself, hey, I think today or tomorrow I'm going to go to this other place. I'm going to do my business. I'm going to stay there for a year. I'm going to, you know, I've just got it all mapped out. This is my plan. And James wants us to understand that that presumption is problematic. There's an issue here that he's trying to bring to the table, and the issue is not business. He's not saying that God is against business trips or against making money. None of those things. This is sort of a kind of a representative case he's trying to bring to our minds, something that we could maybe tangibly relate to because it illustrates some deeper principle. And what is that issue? Well, think of it this way. Some of the most important decisions we face in life sort of fit into things defined in three ways. One is that really important decisions really shape who we are. You know, most of what we're about and how we see things and the conditions that we find ourselves in today are the result of decisions that we have made. And they've really kind of molded who we are as people. And in those important decisions are also unknown consequences. You make a decision today, and this is very much in keeping with what James is about here. You make a decision today not knowing what does this really mean a year down the line, several years down the line. And finally, in this kind of decision-making James is bringing up and that we need to explore, we're not necessarily talking about right or wrong. Like I said, it's not right or wrong to conduct business or to make a profit. The Bible's not against that kind of thing. It's the attitude that underlies it that he's getting at. And he wants us to understand some things. I've just kind of got it in a scheme here, where on the one hand you have things that are just absolutely beyond debate, that are just clear choices, that are right or wrong, period. And so to go out on your spouse, wrong. To, in anger, strike somebody, bludgeon them, whatever, wrong. Okay, you get the idea. Then there is another thing on the other side of the spectrum, areas where we have total freedom. What color socks are you wearing here tonight? I don't think that God cares. I'm pretty sure I don't. And I don't think anyone else does either. There are some things that are just, you know, what we choose, matters of taste, things that we, music or, well, some music I suppose is immoral, but we won't get into that. Never mind. I shouldn't have gone down that street. Some are more tasteful than others. But we have freedom in all these forms. Art, things that we like, stuff like that. That's a realm of total freedom. These things are just matters of taste. Okay, but then in the middle ground is really where life is lived. This funky gray area in which the important decisions of life, my marriage, whether to decide to be married, whether to decide not to marry, decisions that we have to make about our career, the weight that our careers burden us, the amount of time, for instance, that we're willing to invest in them, issues that relate to buying are in this gray area also. They're not right or wrong in themselves, but in context, they steer our ship in a particular direction. And that is something that can either drive us on the rocks or bring us some real freedom in our life. There are questions about our future. Very important. You know, a lot of us are pretty neurotic about our futures. We're really worried that, you know, will the funds be there when I need to retire? Things like that. And so we have just thought that it's best to amass huge amounts of wealth just in case or whatever. And there's a debate about that. Time priorities. You know, where am I allocating my time? And with my kids or with my friends in the context of Christian fellowship, things like that. Here are things that are not in the absolutely right or wrong category. It's not wrong to buy that car or buy that house or pursue that career path necessarily. But wisdom suggests that those things will have a huge effect on your life. They will affect the things that really do matter, that are valuable, and these are the things toward which or about which wisdom speaks. And so James, in talking about moving around and going from this city to that to do business, is really bringing in this important category of those decisions that we make in life that are so important. They're not right or wrong, but they do really define in a profound way who we are and what we're about. They're not predictable, and yet, but in making decisions along these lines, there are things that we really have to live with. And how do we think about those things? And what are the principles behind that? And on the basis of those principles, I think we can more or less sculpt out a wise life that is victorious, that is something sweet and desirable, and, as James is wont to do in his oppositions here, a foolish life, not rooted in the wisdom of God. Things that decisions that we make in this middle category that are really destructive to ourselves and to other people as well. So there's a lot at stake, and my thinking is here tonight, and we'll come back to this at the end, is that all of us, to one extent or another, are at a place of decision-making in this middle gray area where there is really a lot at stake. Think about it just for a second in terms of your parenting and how you are directing your children or what you're doing with your with the stewardship of what God's given you as far as your financial resources, in terms of your ability to really serve Him effectively. There are lots of things that are really on the table for us to think about here tonight. And so it would be helpful for you maybe to think as we go through this about the things that maybe have been impressed upon your mind in this area. Let's start with the contrast, because again, James is just all about contrasts. The foolish tendencies that we all have. I thought of this passage in terms of Proverbs 16:25. I like that. He says, there is a way that seems right to a man, but whose end is death. And, you know, because that really kind of captures the sort of situation and the person that James is describing here. It seems right to go about the course of my life and do my business and go and do this thing and make my profit and do whatever. That just seems right. But James sees a problem with it, and it's really right along the lines of what this proverb is about. Let's unpack it a little bit. Notice what he says. He says, today or tomorrow we'll go to such and such a city, we'll spend a year there, we'll engage in business, we'll make a profit, okay? Yet, and that's the important word, yet, it's not the end of the story. Yet you do not know what your life will be like tomorrow. So there's something in the calculation that James is alerting us to. Namely, that there is a tendency to be presumptuous in the decisions that we're making. There are assumptions that we make or presumptions that we make that are unwise. And so what does he mean by that? Well, I think there's a couple things that come to my mind about this. Specifically, the first is that incredible human tendency to decide first, then justify later. And so, what does that mean? Well, anybody who's in sales knows that purchasers are the most irrational people there are. And the idea is to show them things that kind of fit their ideal. You know, you walk through the house, can't you just see your stuff all here? And look at this car, and doesn't it smell great? And you got all this kind of blood pumping through your system that is driving this desire that you have, and you're like, oh, I've got to have it. And then having made that decision, then I've got to figure out, how does this actually make sense? Which is really just a justification for the decision that I made on very impulsive grounds to begin with. And that's the kind of person that James has in mind here. And again, it's true that a lot of our really important decisions that people make in life really are done on the basis of a passion that they have and are not well thought through. And so we just have to tack on some kind of flimsy reason for it later. You know, serious decisions. You know, who will I choose to spend the rest of my life with? Those are decisions often, you know, made in the heat of the moment. And we haven't thought this kind of thing through. We haven't understood. We haven't really considered. Well, who is this person and what are they about? And do we have that common vision for life and stuff like that? No, our hormones say it's time to go. And there we are. You know, material purchases the same way. There are things that maybe appeal to our ego, make us feel strong, make us feel good about ourselves, that type of thing. And if you just read and look at advertising specifically, advertisers are the greatest social psychologists in America. And I don't mean that I'm very serious when I say that. They study how we think. You get online and you buy something online. All of a sudden, you've got a history now that is bought and sold, and people get into your head. They know what will appeal to you. And then you got all this kind of stuff coming at you. And in a culture like ours that is so infocentric, where we got so much coming at it, it just diminishes wisdom. Because we are really working at a decision made at a keystroke. I see this image and bam, I'm there. And I want that thing. Oh, I shouldn't have done that. Well, I've got to figure out why that made sense. See. And that's the kind of thing that he's talking about here. There are you know, he says, you don't know what your life will be like tomorrow. You're just a vapor that appears for a little while and vanishes. Well, there's nothing that has more sense of permanence about my life than, well, my life. And so, to be thinking about my life as something that's transitory, that's temporary, that's here today, and then is gone at some point in the future, people don't think that way. Well, you may in the sense that you buy an insurance policy or something like that, but it doesn't affect your day-to-day decision-making for many of us, oftentimes. And it's possible to have a whole kind of game plan for life that is rooted in an assumption that simply isn't true. I was thinking about this. Jesus talks about a person like this in Luke chapter 12. He calls him the rich fool. Here's why. It says he told his disciples a parable saying the land of a rich man was very productive. And so he began reasoning to himself, saying, this is Luke 12, verse 16, what shall I do since I have no place to store my crops? I've been very successful. And then he said, this is what I'll do. I'll tear down my barns. I'll build larger ones. And there I will store all my grain and all my goods. And I will say to my soul, soul, you have many goods laid up for many years to come. Take your ease, eat and drink. Be merry. That's the dream. You know, that's retiring with your number, you know, that you carry around, that orange number. But God said to him, thou fool, this very night your soul is required of you, and now who will own what you have prepared? And so is the one who stores up treasure for himself is not rich toward God. See, here's a guy, he didn't understand. His lifespan was considerably shorter than what he thought. And so he was living with this big plan in his life. And he had really mapped it out. And the only calculation that he didn't take into consideration was the fact that he was going to die way earlier than he thought. And now, how sensible is that plan? And, you know, there are a lot of us here, maybe, who actually are wasting our lives, building into a future that may not, in fact, even be there. We've got all our hopes laid up in what is in the future, and we are not really wise in the present. And so it is with anyone who is in this place where it's like, you know, what matters to me is my physical comfort. And I have my things and a nice, controlled, and predictable life. And, you know, the fact of the matter is, reality is not necessarily going to be on board with that agenda. Then what? Then what? See, this guy lost it all. So presumptions behind decisions, those things really matter. He says in verse 16, as it is, you boast in your arrogance, and all such boasting is evil. Okay, what's he talking about here? He's talking about the person who says, hey, it's my life. I mean, who do I answer to? I answer to me. If I want to go do business, I'm going to go do business. If I want to make a profit, why not? I'm going to go out there and I'm going to make my profit. I answer to me, to myself. Well, is that really true? Are we really like that? You know, the person who he's describing here is a person who's saying, I answer to myself, and what I do is pursue the things that I must have. I must have a certain amount of respect, and so I'm going to pursue a way of living that brings a certain amount of glory to me. I'm going to make sure that people notice me. I'm going to make sure that I'm well respected. I must have a certain level of comfort, and so therefore I'm going to orient my life around the acquiring of those things that I must have to be comfortable. The life of pride says, I'm entitled to these things. I mean, I've earned it. It's mine. Or is it? See, that's the question. We have a clash of worldviews. Our culture says, I earned it, it's mine, the sovereignty of the self over his stuff. And the biblical view is, well, actually, no, you received as a gift your intelligence and your place in time, your personality, all the resources that are available to you. God has seen fit to give those things to you, and actually he's given them to you as a stewardship, an investment in you, so that you can accomplish the things in life that he has for you to accomplish, which are actually, in the end, far more satisfying, far more important than what you think you're entitled to. But this attitude that underlies it, these demands that we make from our ego, that's what James is talking about here. He's talking about the person who's saying, I'm in it for me. My goals have to surround themselves with my desires, my wants, myself. And the proverb says, he says, there is that way that seems right to a man. I mean, most people in our culture, basically, if you're here tonight and you know, you're like, well, yeah, of course, that's the way it is. It's the American way, whatever. But the proverb says there's this way that seems right to a man. Self-interest and just living on the basis of self-interest, but whose end is death. And the effect of living this way, my friends, is this. A life of anxiety. Because why? Because the demands of the self are you can't satisfy them. They're insatiable. The more that you have, the more you see you want. I've got this car, and it's a nice car, but man, now I see this other one, and I've got to have that. Or whatever it is, and there's this anxiety holding on to the thing. I don't want to lose it. What is anxiety saying? Anxiety is saying that it's up to me to go out there and satisfy my desires and satisfy the things that I think I'm entitled to, and I worry whether or not I'm going to be able to do that or sustain that. That's what anxiety is. That's what Jesus says in Matthew chapter 6. We worry because we think we need things that God himself is prepared to provide for. We're doing it on our own. Are you an anxious person? Consider the thought that possibly your anxiety is tied to this deep commitment that you have to yourself. The person who's living the life of the ego is one who is isolated. You know, because it's about me and the gratification of my things that I want for me. And so relationships then are more or less rooted in, are you helping me accomplish these things that I want for me? And to the extent that you aren't, then it's time for me to back away. I'm sort of done with this relationship in any kind of meaningful way. You don't fit into my agenda. If you're feeling that sense of, I just put it in quotes here, dry. That sense of, emptiness in a spiritual sense. That live contact with God just seems like more theory than reality. And so you believe the right things, but they don't come alive within you. There's no sense of connection with God or passion about the things of God. Well, what's changed here? Well, you have. God remains who God is. But as we pursue our own agenda, and it's just because it's our thing and not God's thing, it just moves us an increasingly different distance from God. We feel that sense of unreality about our own faith. Are you like that here tonight? That your Christianity is kind of based on a book rather than on something real going on with you and God. I would suggest that with James, your problem and mine is pride. You've got an arrogance problem. You're living life on your terms and not his. We find ourselves in conflicted relationships because why? Because everyone's got their own agenda. We find ourselves very defensive. We don't like to be corrected. We don't like people to get their nose in our thing. Because why? Because then it exposes maybe some of the wrong thinking in our own heart about this kind of stuff. So if you're one who struggles in the area of anxiety, isolation, being kind of distant from God, conflicted, relationally defensive, I suspect that at least a few of us here tonight have difficulty in these areas. And I want to suggest that these are not primarily emotional problems, although certainly they work themselves into our emotional makeup like that. They're not primarily cognitive problems. I'm just not thinking about things right or whatever. They're primarily spiritual problems that I'm having with God. I'm wanting to possess something that doesn't belong to me. You've been bought with a price, Paul says. Glorify Christ in your mortal flesh. Our lives are not our own. We are not the sovereign of our own lives. We are a creature. And as we live in dependence upon our Creator and we surrender to Him all that we are and all that we have, then that pride, we're not living on the basis of that pride principle anymore. And we find that God does supply these very things that we feel that we need to have in our lives. And these incredible things that we might find ourselves struggling with just begin to dissipate with time. So really what James is talking about here is a deeply spiritual problem that people have because we are who we are. Now let's move in a more positive direction. Let's talk then on the positive end of this thing about what does it mean for us to gain wisdom in our lives. These are a couple of points that he makes. The first is in verse 17. He says, so to the one who knows the right thing to do and doesn't do it, to him it is sin. That's interesting. So he's appealing to the thought that there is within us some awareness, some moral awareness, or what I'm calling here a moral compass. And it can get distorted and it can lead us down the wrong way, but that's what God wants to build within us, is this kind of internal understanding of the things that matter, an internalized wisdom that enables us to view our world and our life experience from God's perspective. That's what he's describing here. And he's talking about a biblically informed conscience. He's talking here about that I've taken what the Bible says about the things that matter in life, which we'll talk about here in just a second, and that becomes for me then a grid through which I look at the important decisions that I face in my life. And so when he says, the one who knows the right thing to do and doesn't do it, to him and his sin, he's not saying here, well, it's all relative. You know, to you, this is sin, but to me, it's not. You know, that kind of thing. Everyone decides what's right, you know, for himself. That would be a characteristic of our culture and how we think about these things. That's not what the Bible is teaching. What it's saying instead is that the application of biblical truth to these important areas of our lives is a moral issue, and because of the changing circumstances that we face, the application of these things differs from person to person. But what are the core values? What are the things that really matter that need to inform the riverbed of our conscience, the foundation, the thing that everything else emerges out of? What are those things? Well, those are the things that the scriptures emphasize most about the Christian life. So, for instance, that we are servants with a stewardship from God. That we have been granted, as I said a minute ago, lots of gifts, our moment in time and space, our personality, the resources that we have available to us. God has given us those things because, why? Because He loves us and He wants us to lead a meaningful life. But He has also given them to us as a stewardship, something for which we're accountable to Him, to use, to invest in what He is seeking to do on this in this world, which is to draw people to Himself, to be a part of that. That has to be a conviction that is a part of how we make our decisions in life. The call to sacrificial love. When Jesus was asked, you know, what's the greatest command, what did He say? He said, well, love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, soul. And He said, the second one is just like it, to love your neighbor as yourself. Well, that's not something that you can just put on a checklist. Well, chink, I loved my neighbor today. Chink, I love God today, or whatever. Those are things that come out situationally. As a need comes, and I make that decision then to put that person's needs ahead of my own, then I'm obeying this call to sacrificial love. It implies that we have relationships. It implies that we have relationships. That we are actually sensitive enough to and aware of enough to see where those needs actually are. And to take that initiative and to move towards that person to meet those needs in their life. That's the core of it. It's the core of a biblical conscience. Lastly, to show forth God's reality in our life. I've been rethinking the incredible importance of material that my wife and I read early in our marriage, because we've been married 30 years this year, so there's a lot of this kind of melancholic reflection and where have we gone and where are we going. It's actually pretty good, sort of. And we read this book, read a couple of them by this woman who just put it together so well for us. And she said, what is the purpose of a family? What is the purpose of a family? What kind of a question is that? I don't know. It just is. Now, man, God designed the family for a reason. And what is that reason? And she says, it's to show forth the existence of God. And I thought, how beautiful is that? How beautiful is that? To think about the most important investments in my life, my wife, my children, as being opportunities to show the world the love of God, to show the world how He intended for us to be, to show the world there's a better way. To show the world what it looks like to have a spiritual relationship among very different people and to have a deep, abiding, productive unity within that relationship. What an awesome thing that is. And of course, that just flows right from the fact that our life is a stewardship from God. That He is the Lord over all, including our families. And so just with those core biblical values that just bleed off of virtually every page of Scripture, and especially of the New Testament, those core values are the things that we're about. And if we're about those things, it's going to enable us to see things in a very different light. We may find, for instance, that the things that we may have been very able to walk away from without even considering it at one point now really bother us a great deal. We begin to look around and we see people who are suffering, people who are in real need, and it calls to us and it says, what are you going to do? Rather than, sorry about that for them. Something has changed in us when we begin to look at the world that way. Here is a fact. This is a fact. I've researched this carefully. I know that this is true. Jesus targeted the lack of love over all overt sins in his ministry. You know, he was okay with the prostitutes. They were welcome in his presence. They kind of followed along with him where he went. He was more than willing to say, you know, you who really have it together morally, you cast the first stone. He showed him mercy, showed him grace. To the thief on the cross, he said, "Today I tell you, you'll be with me in paradise." To the traitorous, rip-off tax gatherer, he said, "You, come, follow me." And Jesus doesn't have a problem with sinful people. But where Jesus really targets the problem is with the people who look okay on the outside, but they just forget about the thing that really matters. The Good Samaritan is a great illustration of this. It's the priest goes the other way, the rabbi goes the other way. Not my problem. But the Samaritan's like, here's a person in need, and I'm here to meet that need. That's what it's all about. In Matthew 25, Jesus talks about when people will come before him in judgment, and he says, you know, where were you when I was hungry, and when I was naked, and when I was in prison, and all these things? And they're like, that was never happening to you. And he says, well, that has occurred to the least of these, you know, my brothers, has happened to me. And it's the whole idea that we can appear self-righteous and we cannot be the person who's not into murder and not into adultery and not into all these kinds of things. But what about the positive commitment that we have in our lives to meet the real needs of other people? That has to shape and form at the core of who we are, our conscience. And when we are on board with God in that way, then we are going to begin to develop this practical wisdom to look at the complicated things in life. And sometimes when we do, we're going to be able to connect those dots and we're going to be able to say, how can my life truly embody these core values that I'm about? To live my life as a demonstration of God's existence, to have a real ownership of the stewardship of my life that it is before God, to be that one who is prepared to stand in there and really be about the love of God in my life. And when we are thinking in this way, we look at the various things in our lives and we're saying, how can I accomplish these things? What do those things mean in my career, in my family, in my neighborhood, in my home church, in the connections with people that I have through my hobbies, through my children, through all of the different kinds of things in life? And when we begin thinking that way, now we're thinking purposefully. Now we're thinking in terms of what is the opportunity for God to manifest himself in and through me. And so sometimes, you know, a wise person, the person that I'm describing here, the foolish person that we described earlier, may make the same decision, maybe in their career. Maybe they will make the same decision about some of the things that they pursue with their kids or whatever, but for very different reasons and to very different effect. And that's the thing that's really important here, is what I'm asking myself. How is what I'm involved with here really honoring Christ? And that's going to open up my eyes, my thinking, to the circumstances that I'm in. I'm going to see my neighbor not as the annoyance that I need to shut out of my life, but as the broken person that she really is, who may need my help. I may see that person in my home group that I don't know well, instead of saying, well, yeah, I'm glad somebody else is in their life, to turn around and take active interest in that person and like, how can I pray for you and how can I be involved in your life in a meaningful way? See, and that's just how we gain this kind of outlook. You know, sometimes it means making the same kind of decisions that other people make, but for different reasons and with a different effect. Sometimes it means doing something totally radical. Something totally radical. Like, how about instead of spending a bunch of money to go on a nice Caribbean vacation, to use that time to go to Nigeria and serve orphans and widows. Some of you have done that, just came back from that. I think that's sweet, that's awesome. How about instead of thinking about what's my game plan for retirement, how can I take the financial resources I have and meet the pressing needs of people right in front of my face right now? How about that? That's radical. That says, I trust God with my future. I'm not being frivolous about my future, but I trust God with my future so that I can be generous with what He has given me in the present. That's radical. I think, you know, people have said this. I think it's kind of true that if there aren't in our decision making, in a kind of an ongoing way, kind of real risky decisions that we're contemplating, ways of really exposing ourselves, putting ourselves out there, that really we have lost that edge, that we are living a life that's sort of in our own control, and we're not allowing ourselves to be at that place where we have to really depend upon God Himself. That's radical. How about that? And, you know, we can think of all manner of ways to live a radical life, to live on the edge, to put ourselves at risk for the sake of Christ and what He is doing in the world. That is an awesome thing. And then lastly, he says in verse 15, instead you ought to say, if the Lord wills. Not we're going to go here for a year and we're going to do business and make a profit. How about in saying instead, if the Lord wills, we will live and also do this or that. That's a different perspective. God has more for you than a moral will for your life. And this is important. If the Lord, God does have a will for you. He has a will for your life. He designed you to make a unique contribution to what He's doing in the world. That's what Paul says in Ephesians 2:10. You are God's masterpiece, created in Christ Jesus for works of excellence that He prepared beforehand for you to walk in. That's what that passage teaches. And so, you know, instead of just sort of this thing where I'm going to go out and I'm going to choose and I'm going to do this thing and I'm going to do that thing and do the other thing, what we need to do is say, God, what's your thing? You have designed me to do something that matters. I don't know how this decision that I'm contemplating, whether it's business or whatever, fits in that plan. I need to seek you out on that. I need to ask myself, how does this fit with your design for me and your will for my life? Here's a very important point. Point that a lot of us are having a hard time getting, and which is that when we are asking what is the will of God, that we are asking a question that doesn't just affect us, it affects a whole framework of people that we're a part of, because God has placed you in a spiritual community to live interdependently. God puts the members of the body together just as He desires, it says. That's 1 Corinthians 12, verse 18. Just as He desired. Not what you desire, what He desired. And so we've got this dynamic where my faith is not sufficient to really live for the Lord in my life. I need the resources that God has for me through my brothers and sisters. And they need that from me as well. So that when I'm making a decision, when I'm contemplating the will of God, I'm needing to ask myself, does this put me at a place where I can more ably stand in there and be that person in the life of this group that I'm a part of, this body that I'm a member of, or not? You know, one of these people who are contemplating doing business somewhere else, they're not saying to themselves, hey man, I think I'm going to go to Indianapolis for a year and make some money. So wife, kids, see ya. I mean, some people would do that, but not many. And I don't think very many of us here would be okay with that. I think we'd say that's really stupid. How unloving is that? You know, you've got a role to play in the in your family's life, and you're just going to set that aside so you can make some money over there? Wow. That sucks for everybody. That's just not right. But why don't we have then, okay, why wouldn't we have then that same sort of thinking process about decisions that affect our ability to serve the people that God in His sovereignty has placed in our lives to serve? We are very autonomous as a society, and that's not God's way. And so let's just bring it together here. If we are really building this moral compass around the priorities that, that God has for His people, do we love like He loves? Do we see our life as the stewardship that it is? That we make commitments in our lives to demonstrate the reality of Christ? And that, and on the other hand, that we are seeking God out to say, God, You have created me as a servant with certain gifts, certain abilities to serve You, and a context within a body in which to do that. Then what's going to happen is that those things coming together, it's just like the longitude and the latitude, the grid coming together, the XY graph, whatever it is you want to say, that enables us to have God's wisdom about the important things in our life. That's the building blocks of it. That's the foundation of it. Those are the principles that James is getting at here tonight. I think that they are very challenging and very cool as well, because we can have the mind of God. We can think about the difficulty, the complicated nature of our life from His perspective. We can get His clarity if we are willing to be on board with these things that James is bringing to our attention here tonight. And so that just leaves us with this question here, is what is the important decision that God has before you here today? There are decisions that we make that affect the rest of our life, that affect the people around us. Very important decisions. I think we are all at a place where where God's calling on us to re-up on those kinds of decisions. Maybe we're here tonight and we're just not really sure that we even are a Christian in the biblical sense. We just feel like, you know, I've been a good person or whatever, but I realize that maybe that's not what the thing's all about. At least that's what this person keeps telling me. And here's a decision that you can make here tonight. Why don't you ask the living God to reveal Himself to you? That would be a really wise thing to do. Why don't you decide to seek Him out, to get your questions answered? Maybe you don't have questions left. Maybe you sense that what you're hearing in the Christian message is really true, that the idea that God loves you, that God is moving toward you, that God wants to forgive you, that sounds pretty good. And now you're left with that decision of, do I want to choose to trust Christ and His death on the cross to deal with my sin and my barrier with God to receive His forgiveness? That's a decision that some of us may need to be making. Why not make that here tonight? Why don't we just get this thing done with God? Let's close the deal. Let's receive the gift that He has for us. And others of us, we just find ourselves in our swimming in our pride, and we're pressing here and we're pressing there, and we do find ourselves to be this anxious, dried up, discontent person, and we're realizing, okay, maybe God is bringing to my attention here tonight that I'm really living that life of the ego. It's time for me to seek Him out, His wisdom,
and to make some decisions that are going to enable me then to be really useful in his hands and to see things from his perspective. You've been fighting God too long, and it's wearing you out. And now's the time just to say, Uncle, I want to be on board with the things that God has for me.
This study was recorded at Xenos Christian Fellowship and is copyrighted. You may freely copy and distribute it as long as you keep it intact and do not sell it.